Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome indeed to hour number two of the Mark Moses Show. And let's go out to Tampa, Florida and talk some NFL draft as we're about a month away. This guy does a great job 24/7 for Athlon Sports. He's my good friend, Luke Easterling. Luke, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, buddy. We're exactly a month away. A month from today. Let's do it.
I love it. Let's start with the quarterbacks. Everything's been about, you know, the top three, May, Williams, you know, just all these different guys. But tell me about J.J. McCarthy, because is this guy making an Anthony Richardson type elevation up the draft?
Well, I mean, first of all, let's talk about what we mean when we say somebody is rising up the board. Really, all that means every year when that happens is that the media is finally catching up to where the league has always been with these guys. Like, you know, that J.J. McCarthy didn't magically get better. And we didn't learn anything about J.J. McCarthy, the player, that we didn't already know in October. But what we're understanding and the reason you're starting to see him, you know, as a top five pick in all these mock drafts and all these things is that we're finally starting to understand since the combine, now with the pro day, that NFL teams like him a lot more than I think a lot of us in the media really expected them to or thought they might. And that's why you're seeing him up that way.
What do you like about him?
You know, what I like most about him is obviously the intangible things. Right? I talk to anybody in that building, in that program, and they just rave about his preparation. They rave about him as a leader, his toughness, all those intangible things. But I think really what gets teams excited about him, and you mentioned Anthony Richardson, obviously they're not similar as prospects whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But I think that the offensive scheme in Michigan, it was kind of a detriment to him in certain ways because it just never – put a ton on his shoulders, right? He there's not the volume of film as a passer to go and look at compared to a guy like maybe Michael Penix Jr., who led the nation in passing, where they're throwing the ball a ton. And Michigan, you know, they had a really good defense and they ran the ball really, really well, so they really didn't have to put a lot on McCarthy to go win games all the time. But when they did, he did. You know, so I mean, if you look at, especially in those big moments, you know, he made big plays when he needed to make athletic plays, when he needed to have the arm talent and the arm strength to zip the ball where he needed to. He showed he was capable of doing that. The tough part is, if he's asked to do it more often, can he continue to do it at that rate, I think is the rub for anybody in the media or a team that maybe is concerned about his projection. But really what I like most is that he checks all the physical and mental boxes that you want from a franchise quarterback. Again, you would have liked to see him have an opportunity to show them off more often, but I think that's what teams are banking on is those flashes of brilliance that he had as both an athlete and as a passer, and then the leadership capabilities that come along with that.
Okay, your latest mock draft, and you do a great job with all your mock drafts. Where do you have him on the board for round one?
I mean, I just don't see him getting out of the top five. I think that somebody's going to trade up, which sounds crazy, for the fourth quarterback off the board, right? I think that he will be – he's probably the fourth quarterback off the board. You could – you know, some people might make an argument that he would go ahead of Drake May. I think that's a good bit rich for me. But, I think obviously it's Caleb Williams at one. I think it's probably Jaden Daniels at two. I still think unless somebody just – gives a really crazy offer to the Patriots, I think they've got to take whoever that third guy is, probably May. And then, you know, if you want the next guy, you're going to have to get up there, because I think if McCarthy's there for the Giants at six, I think they would take him. I think they would, you know, again, financially hanging on to, you know, they're going to probably have to hang on to Daniel Jones for at least another year. But if they had a chance to take him at six, McCarthy, I think they would. And so that puts Arizona at four and the Chargers at five, that's where you have to get. And I think everybody's obviously looking at Minnesota, right? Minnesota didn't trade up to the 23rd pick, and now they've got 11 and 23. They didn't do that so they could stay at 11 and 23 and take a corner and a defensive lineman. You know, that's not why they made that move. They made that move so that now they have two first-round picks so that they can try to get up in the top five to get whoever that next quarterback is.
All right, if you're Minnesota like that, don't you have to offer more than 11 and 23 if you're getting into that top five?
I mean, that remains to be seen, but it wouldn't surprise me, right? It's the old quarterback tax, right? That's if you're trading up for anything but a quarterback, that's probably enough. If you're trading up for a quarterback, you're probably going to need more than that. So wouldn't surprise me if they end up needing more than that again, because you're talking about a pick outside the top 10 and then another pick outside the top 20. probably going to take more than that. And again, you also have to think from the Cardinals and the indoor Chargers point of view. Yeah. Think about what they're passing up by moving out of that pick. Because if three quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, and you're Arizona and you've got an offer from Minnesota to come down, you've got Marvin Harrison Jr. staring right at you, you know, and you need that type of receiver. Even if he's off the board and the Chargers are at 5, they're staring at Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze as the next receiver. They're staring at Joe Alt to play right tackle across from Rashawn Slater, two guys that would really, really help Justin Herbert, especially after they let go Keenan Allen and Mike Williams so they could need a receiver. So, you know, it's going to take a lot. It's going to have to take a lot for those two teams, one of them, to pass up the players available at the positions of need that they have in order to move down. So I think that's why, again, it'll take more than those two first.
We're here at Lou Gieseling with Athlon Sports. We've discussed this before, but I want to reset it. I've never seen a top 10 where it could be all quarterbacks, wide receivers. I've never seen this before. Have you?
No, not like this. I mean, again, I think we'll be lucky to get one defensive player in the top 10. I think that you might get a pass rusher or a corner to the Falcons at 8 if they stay there. But otherwise, it's going to be 4 quarterbacks, 3 receivers, and at least one offensive tackle, maybe 2. Maybe Brock Bowers gets in there. But I think, you know, Dallas Turner, the edge guy for Alabama, I think might be the only defensive player that has a chance of getting in the top 10.
All right, let's go to the top. Caleb Williams, is this a stone-cold lock? Like, there's no mystery, he's the pick at 1.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see there's any mystery there whatsoever. Well, now that the Justin Fields trade has happened, I think that signals that they've got their guy, and I think it's Williams.
All right. What's your explanation of what happened to Justin Fields, why he's in Pittsburgh now?
I mean, I think Ryan Poles waited too long. I think he lost his leverage. You know, or the league just was always low on Justin Fields, like way lower than we all would have expected, right? I mean, if that's all they got for him, the most sensible thing to me, if I was Ryan Poles, was to trade him, you know, maybe at right after the combine, right? I feel like that was probably the latest you could get anything of substance, because once everybody gets the combine and everybody starts talking and it gets around that, oh yeah, the Bears are definitely taking Caleb Williams, there's no leverage. There's no leverage from the Bears side, so the only thing that Ryan Poles has to do is hope that there's going to be leverage created by a robust market for the player, right? Because if you can't generate leverage on your end, you have to hope that teams will compete with their offers against one another to generate leverage that way. And so when you haven't traded him by free agency and Atlanta signs Kirk Cousins and, you know, all these other teams make their quarterback moves, you're left with very few landing spots. You're left with Denver and Pittsburgh and maybe Vegas. You know, there was just like other teams had made their moves at that point. And so I think the price tag that it ended up being, you know, conditional 6 that can turn into a 4th, I think, you know, part of that has to do with the fact that if you do hit on him, now he needs a major contract because he's going to be in a contract year, and that probably played into the price. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think if they were going to get a premium pick for Justin Fields, they would have had to do it no later than the combine, because once everybody knows what you're doing with the pick, it just drives the price down because they know you have to trade him now at some point. And they just, I feel like other teams waited them out, and the Steelers got a huge win.
So the Steelers, they have 2 starting quarterbacks. The salaries combined, what, $5 million? Is that what it is? Like, is this a
whole? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, is this a great move, even if it's a gamble for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Oh, it's a huge move. It's a no-lose situation for them, and you could say the same thing about signing Russell Wilson. I think both of those moves are no-risk, high-reward moves. I think you get both of those guys in the building. You know, you let them compete. I think, obviously, with what Russ has accomplished in his career, he or has earned the right, I think, to get first dibs at that job. But I think especially for what they're paying, I feel like kind of like Baker Mayfield in Tampa last year, right? You could say what you want about his, you know, ability or performance going into last season. But if you look at, would you rather have paid $4 million for Baker Mayfield or $37 million for Derek Carr or $40 million for Daniel Jones? You know, that makes it obvious that the Bucks got the bargain there. So if you're comparing Justin Fields and Russell Wilson and what they're paying them, to what some of these other really mediocre and or less quarterbacks are making. It's, both of those moves are huge wins for the Steelers.
We're here, Luke Easton, with Athlon Sports. One more for Caleb Williams. Are his expectations for year one, are they going to be unrealistic? Or, no, you should be dominating on the football field. Like, what's your take, Luke?
I mean, honestly, I feel like he's going to have a situation that's probably one of the best situations a number one overall pick quarterback has had in a long, long time. You're going to a team that isn't picking number one because they were bad. They're yeah. doing it because someone else was bad. And obviously the Bears weren't great last year. Their pick is in the top 10 too, but it's ninth. And then you look at the additions they've made around him already. And I think that's probably got to be the most bitter pill for Justin Fields to swallow on the way out. Would have been like, hey, let me throw to Keenan Allen. Let me throw to another top 10 pick and watch the offensive line upgrades you guys have made and give me another year in this system and let me live up to, the first round billing that I had. But I think for Caleb Williams, you look around, and again, see what they're putting around him and see the fact that they're not a bottom two, not the worst roster in the league. And I think that combined with his talent, combined with his personal projections as a prospect, I think that people should expect him to be more successful than we're used to seeing a number one pick being as a rookie.
Are you locked in with the second pick for Washington then?
No, I don't think so. I think that once you start to get away from number one, I think you could make a strong case for Jaden Daniels. I think if I had to pick, I'd lean his way. But I think Drake May is absolutely worthy of the same conversation. I think that if Washington wants more of a traditional pocket passer, he's probably the guy. He's still a great athlete and can make plays, outside the pocket when he needs to and pick up some yards on the ground. But I feel like Jaden Daniels is like Lamar Jackson levels of electrifying as a runner, and that's just on a completely different level. And when you see the growth that he made as a passer last season from the pocket, moving outside and throwing on the run, and I know he had great weapons and all that, but he created so much of that offense with his athleticism and with the improvements he made as a passer that I feel like that gives him the edge there. But again, I mean, both the quarterback class and the receiver class this year are so rare in that you have three guys at both positions that in any year would be the easy number one overall or number one player in the position out off the board. Quarterback would be the number one overall pick easy. You have three of those. You have three quarterbacks and three wide receivers who are at that level. And it's just a fantastic class because of that.
Do you have any concerns with Harrison Jr. where he keeps skipping things during this process?
No, not at all. I think, if anything, everybody just needs to understand that it's not 1984 anymore. Like, it doesn't, the players have power and leverage as they should have always had, in my opinion. But now the cat's out of the bag. All this, go through the grind and prove it and all this. The players are smarter than that. They've seen behind the curtain now. You can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. They know better at this point. They know better than to put themselves through things that they know they don't have to. And so with a guy like Marvin Harrison, it's a business decision. He is being a smart person. He is being a smart business person and football player by saying, listen, what could I possibly go out at the combine or the pro day and prove to you in a way that I could improve how you feel about me as a player? Everybody already thinks so highly of him. The film speaks for itself. Obviously, his dad being a Hall of Famer doesn't hurt. But what could he possibly gain from going out and performing at any of those events? No, all he said was, listen, I'm going to go prepare for my rookie season. I'm going to go prepare to play football this fall. I'm not going to go spend 6 weeks trying to shave a tenth of a second off my 40-yard dash time by focusing on my track running form. I'm not going to run track. I'm going to play football. And so I think that, honestly, to me, whereas, you'll have some old school guys who are like, oh, I hate it, and he's not a team player, and he's a diva. I just don't buy it. I think it's BS. I think he's making a smart business decision and a decision that if I'm the team that is going to draft him, I will be much happier that he spent the offseason preparing to make an impact on Sundays instead of trying to make an impact for 4.2 seconds on a weekend in March, as opposed to trying to be the best football player he can be when it actually matters.
Do you like him as a fit going to Arizona then?
If Marvin Harrison does not fit your offense sucks. Fix it. Change it.
Get him the
whatever
ball.
It takes.
Get him
I
the
don't,
ball.
Like, my, I, and I, honestly, I feel that way about the top three receivers in this draft. If you have a scheme that tells you that Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze is not a good fit, you need to fire your offensive staff and find one that is competent. Because if they can't figure out a way to get any of those guys the ball and make them the focal point of the offense, they probably should not be in that position.
Okay, you're the Bears at 9. I think you trade down now to get a second-round pick, have another one maybe in the teens, and get something else. What would you do at 9?
Yeah, I think that's probably the ideal scenario for them, right, is they only have 4 picks total now. You know, 2 of them are in the top 10, and that's great. You're going to get your quarterback, which is great. But after the Keenan Allen trade and some of the other moves they've made, the Montez Sweat trade at the deadline last year, they really don't have a ton of picks. And so if you're now committed to Williams at 1, so now you're not going to move down from 1 for the big, you know, package that you might have gotten to move down there, 9 is where you want to move down. And part of that is because of what's going to happen ahead of them.
Yeah.
The only scenario in which I don't try to move down if I'm Chicago from 9 is if one of those receivers is there. If for some reason, again, do the math, 4 quarterbacks, at least 1 receiver, so that's 5. A tackle goes there, that's 6. You're hoping that somehow Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers falls to you at 9, then I stay there and I take that guy because, again, I just think talent, and if you're trying to build around a quarterback, you want one of those guys. And I would stay at 9 for that, but anything else I'm trying to move down because, again, what else do you need? You need a pass rusher. You know, you need maybe a guard, you know, things that you don't have to spend the top 10 pick to get. In this class. And so I think 9 is where you want to move down. Like you said, maybe get an extra 2, get some better value and still fill the same needs. But that's where I would look to move down unless one of those top receivers is there.
Where do you have Brock Bowers in your first round?
Right now I've got him at 10 to the Jets. I think the other moves that they made to address the offensive line and also to bring in Mike Williams at receiver, I feel like that really sets the Jets up very nicely to be able to make a luxury pick, if you will, in terms of spending a top 10 pick on a tight end. But, man, think about that offense. You know, obviously, if Rodgers stays healthy, you got Breece Hall in the backfield, you got Mike Williams and Garrett Wilson at wide receiver. You made some, again, veteran upgrades to the offensive line, and then you add Brock Bowers to that equation, who isn't just a nice receiver. He can block. Obviously, in Georgia's offense, you got to be able to block or you're not going to be on the field. But what a mismatch weapon for him to be in that short to intermediate range to win after the catch. Opposing defenses are going to be focused on slowing down Wilson and Williams on the outside. And then I feel like him and Rodgers would just work the intermediate area so well. I feel like he'd be a great fit there.
All right. If you're Atlanta or you're Tennessee and Bowers is there, don't you okay, maybe we should just take this guy. Like, he could be our Travis Kelce.
Well, I mean, if you're Atlanta, you have Kyle Pitts. And so if you want to do that, you already have a guy that you should be able to do that with. Tennessee, it would make some sense, but I just don't think anything matters in Tennessee until you get an offensive line. I mean, Skoronski at left guard is really the only guy that, I mean, I know that I think they signed Lloyd Cushenberry, so the center is probably handled at that point. But they are in a perfect spot. They need a franchise left tackle, and nobody ahead of them is going to take one, I don't think, unless the Chargers stay and they don't want a receiver. They could take Joe Alt. But if they're at 7 and none of the tackles are gone, I think it's a perfect scenario for them to sit there. They need to take a franchise left tackle. They can't afford to spend that pick on a tight end, in my opinion. They gotta address the trenches first.
Let's end with this, and I appreciate coming on. We're here at Luke Easterling. Thank God your Tampa Bay Buccaneers re-signed Mike Evans, okay? Like, if he would have left for Kansas City, would you have been heartbroken in that situation?
Of course, absolutely. I mean, I don't think, you know, based on what I knew, I never really expected him to go anywhere. But in the back of your mind, even as a fan, you're like, yeah, but it's possible. And so that was a very nice day in my house when we got that alert that the deal was done. Again, that's kind of what we always expected. We knew both sides wanted to make it work. I was very, very confident that he was never going to play anywhere else, and so I'm glad that's what happened.
Do you think Baker Mayfield got a good deal from the Buccaneers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a win for both sides. I think that they are getting a quality, competent quarterback. I think he's the 16th highest paid quarterback in the league, which I think is a bargain for a guy who, you know, had the best year of his career last year, went to the Pro Bowl. and a guy that fits. He fits the locker room. They rallied around him last year. He fits the offense, even though they're switching coordinators. He's got experience with Liam Cohen and that offense with the Rams from a couple years ago. The terminology is going to be similar because he and Dave Canales are coming from the same basic coaching tree with Shane Waldron and some of those guys. So I just think he fits. He fits the team, the culture, the city, even the personality, the chip on your shoulder and everybody doubting, the team. And I just feel like it's such a good fit. He got the payday he earned. It's still cost effective enough for the Bucks to move on after a couple of years. If it doesn't work out, they're not going to, set themselves back too much. So I'd much rather have Baker Mayfield at his number than, again, some of those other guys I mentioned earlier, the Derek Carrs, the Daniel Jones and guys like that. Even Kirk Cousins. I mean, $45 million a year for Kirk Cousins at 36 years old coming off a torn Achilles. I'd rather have Baker Mayfield at his number at 28 years old and what he's done.
If you're Vegas, who's the favorite to win the NFC South then, right now?
I mean, I feel like they're probably going to give it to Atlanta just because of the quarterback thing. They're going to say Cousins is going to take care of all those, take advantage of all those weapons. And I, no offense to Atlanta, because I do think they're going to be a much better football team. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that I think Raheem Morris is going to be a damn good head coach the second time around. And it's long overdue. I'm not thrilled to see him back in the division again, because I think he's a really great coach. But the talent is there. I just don't know how you don't pick the team that's won the division the last 3 years in a row, the one that proved they could win it again last year, even though Tom Brady had left, and brought pretty much everybody back and re-signed all their big free agents, Baker Mayfield, Mike Evans, Lavonte David is back. They're going to have another rookie class coming in. I don't know how you don't pick the team that, again, is looking for a fourth straight division title, and most of that team is still intact.
I just want you to know this, and I'll let you go. Everyone knows Caleb Williams is the first pick. Like, it just starts selling the jerseys, right? I have never had this experience in my life. My dad is 72. He's never seen this. We've never had the first pick and actually made the pick. So I'm going to really cherish those 10 minutes on the clock. I hope you know that, Luke. We make the pick.
You should. Down here in Tampa, we know way too much about having the number one overall pick, so enjoy it.
Oh, man. Oh, it's going to be wild. What can we check out with Athlon Sports Buddy for the latest on the NFL draft?
Yeah, so Athlon, right now we're rolling out a bunch of our scouting reports, which you can also see in the print magazine that we put out every year. I know if you're anything like me, I've been buying that since I was a kid.
Yeah,
and it was a lot of fun to be involved in making this year's copy. So definitely go out and grab a copy of that. But we'll have all the scouting reports going up. We'll obviously have all the news and analysis. We'll have mock drafts every week up there as well. But anything you need to know about the top prospects, we got you covered just like we do every year.
Did you like go to a bookstore and like look for it and then see your name?
You have to, man. I get like texts from my parents and my brothers, and they're like, hey, I'm at the store and here's this book with your name in it. It's pretty cool. It's that never gets old, man. I'll tell you.
Dude, that's so cool. Luke, thank you so much for coming on, and enjoy your day. All right.
You too, Mark. Take care, buddy.